Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hello, Smart Money Tree Podcast listeners. Welcome to this week's show. My name is Kirk Chisholm, and I will be your host. So today, we're talking with Lizette Smith. How are you doing today, Lizette?
I am doing great, Kirk. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, today we're going to be talking about the mid-gap year, or midlife gap year, I should say. It's an interesting concept that Lizette brought to me. I really wanted to bring it out because I think it really brings in this concept of how to make your lives better, which doesn't always revolve around money. But I think it's really important to think about how we can improve our lives in different aspects. So Lizette, tell us a little about your background.
So I have really been in the wealth advisory field my whole career. I got my CFP now about 30 years ago, time flies. And I started out at kind of an old school Boston family office managing generational wealth. But then a partner and I started an independent firm doing fiduciary, fee-only advice to individuals, business owners. I think as anyone who has started and grown a business knows, it was really gratifying and really intense to have my own practice and kind of build a business. And I did that for about 10 years. And then, as we'll talk about a little bit more, you know, in my early 40s, kind of started thinking about, is there something else I want to do more? You know, this is all I've ever done. And I ended up selling that business, which gave a little financial breathing room to think about next steps, and then kind of regrouped and did some family things, gave back a little bit. We became foster parents, and then ended up going back to school to learn negotiation and mediation. Harvard has a really good negotiation program that I went through, and then kind of started a different business, mediating partnerships. My partner and I ended up working mostly with advisory firms, wealth advisory firms. So I kind of came full circle. As I was advising advisory firms and working with those partners, I realized I really liked that work. And I frankly think I was a lot better at it than I was as a mediator. And so I was able to join the firm I'm with now, the advisory group. And, you know, they had a similar philosophy, really focusing on, as you were saying earlier, trying to help people use their resources to build the life they want. And it may not be a straight line as mine wasn't, but think about the longer arc of your life and how your resources can work with that.
I love that concept. And it sounds like you've taken a very meandering path. So you've done a lot of different things. What's really been your favorite part?
It's so rewarding to do something you feel like you're really adding value. And I think for me, working where I am now, kind of working with people where I've kind of gone through that. So I feel like I have a lot more to add, and it's just more rewarding to work in the advisory world with people that are kind of going through something similar that I did not that long ago.
You talk about this concept of the midlife gap year. What does that mean to you? Probably a lot of listeners are not familiar with that term. So what does that mean to you?
It's funny because when we were coming up with this, I think when we talk about the midlife gap year, we are trying to not take it so literally, that, but we wanted to put it in terms that people were a little familiar with, because we're used to gap years for people that are, for kids getting out of high school before they start college. And just that idea of having a midlife break, a mid-career break, where you take some time off. It doesn't have to be a year, although that's kind of what we chose to show how it could work. But take some time off and either explore something you've been wanting to do, or even something that's career related but tangential. There's a lot of ways to approach it. And we try to have a structure that's flexible enough to work with, you know, whether people want to do that by really taking a year, whether they want to just get away from their business for 6 months or something, or how they want to structure it. But the idea is, it doesn't have to be a straight line. Like, you can make a plan that meanders, like as you were saying earlier.
I don't know, Lizette, when I grew up, taking a gap year was not something people considered. It was like, what are you, lazy?
Yeah, you know,
get to college, get to work, get to this, get to that. There was no gap. That was a luxury back then.
You know, and it really still is a luxury. And I probably should say that. I mean, we're fortunate that we, you know, work with people with resources and, you know, both financial resources and kind of skill resources. So it kind of reduces the risk that if they take time off, that they'll be able to get back into the workforce or that they'll be able to be gainfully employed. And that's part of what we try to plan for. So I think you're right about that. I don't want to discount that. I mean, it works at a lot of levels, but to be honest, most of the time that we're planning it is with people that's an option.
In some ways, you know, what I find interesting is I know a lot of people didn't look at it this way, but in many ways, 2020 was a gap year for a lot of people.
We had put this together before that. We put it together in 2019 and we're kind of thinking of launching it. And then COVID started. And that was kind of our thought, like, who on earth is going to want to take gap year after they've been at home with their family, like kind of worst case scenario, maybe of a gap year. But really now that we're hopefully on the other side of that, I think it has added just a dimension of people rethinking how they want to do their work-life balance. And as I think you've seen, it's led to this great resignation, but also just people, you know, not wanting to go back into the office, just having more demands or at least thoughts around what kind of life they could sketch out if they could work more balance into their lives. It has been from the initial time of 2020 or that year when people were home to where we are now, I think we're starting to see more of the long-term implications of what it meant for a lot of at least white collar workers or people that were able to work anywhere, you know, what are going to be the implications of that and how do you plan for that?
I think what's interesting, I mean, if you think about it, there are academics who get this after 20 years in some places where they get a gap year, so to speak, or they get a year off if they so choose, which I find to be a really nice benefit. Can imagine what it would be like to just, after 20 years of working, you just get a year off to do whatever you want. And in many ways, last year, people had the opportunity. Most people didn't use it. You know, they were sitting at home, whether working or not, but they had the opportunity to do other things. So if somebody has this opportunity, and obviously not everybody will, but if somebody has this opportunity or can plan to create this opportunity, which also is a whole nother part, how do you suggest people kind of go about it? I mean, you could do anything you want. Well, how should people, it's almost too overwhelming to think about.
It does take kind of building some groundwork. And you mentioned academics taking sabbaticals, and that is a little bit, you know, how we initially looked at it too, because a lot of the reason we came up with this concept partly was client driven. So it was partly people coming to us in midlife who had some savings, you know, had participated in their 401k plan and were able to save, or and in the Bay Area, especially people who have a lot of home equity, and were kind of focused on doing an early retirement. So the initial question is, you know, can I retire early? I'm just really stressed. I'm juggling too many things. And when can I see light at the end of the tunnel? When we would go to look at people's ability to retire early, and we look at it kind of, we do a probability analysis and stress test some things and look at potential order of market returns and risk reward, all those good planning things. And when we looked at it, for a lot of people, it is really hard to retire early. Like retiring at 55 or at an age where baby boomers were sometimes able to retire. Now with longevity and trying to plan for, if you did that, you'd be planning for a 35 or 40 year retirement. It's difficult. And so this was kind of a remedy for that. Like, I get it. You're struggling. You've got a lot going on. You've got two career earners, kids at home. It's a lot. You want to look forward to something. And when we ran the numbers, taking a gap year and even planning for that and trying to plan for some worst case scenarios, and then having a normal retirement and then going on to work until your mid-60s was a lot more, it showed a lot better outcomes. And it was also a nearer term relief. You know, instead of people thinking, okay, I'm 45, can I retire at 55? It's kind of like, well, you can't retire at 55, honestly, but you could. Where are you now? Could you take a break? Could you slow things down now when you really need it? And how do the numbers work then? And what we saw was that working the full amount, you know, working another 10 years, taking a year now, but then working till you're 65 or 67, it is, you know, more beneficial. So in terms of starting the planning, you know, I think people's initial reaction is, well, I can't possibly do that. But when you start talking about it and start talking about at least the financial part, and there is a lot to fill in about, well, what would you do with it? And what are the financial implications of that? But there is some basic math that works better for taking a gap year instead of retiring early.
So why do you think it's so hard for people to retire early? I mean, I hear the same things where people just can't turn it off, especially when they have enough means so they can retire. Like, why do you think it's so hard?
That's a good question. And I love reading a lot about the kind of psychology of that. And we certainly have clients that are in their 70s who are still working very productively because they love what they do. And I think you see this, not everyone loves what they do, but if you are in that position where you get a lot of validation, and it's just what it's also for a lot of people, a big part of their social network is people that they work with. So they get a lot back from that. And so I just think in terms of, you know, when we see people that successfully retire, having something where you still have a community, and for a lot of people, work is their community. So it's hard to leave that behind. And a lot of this is also based on academic research and people like the Stanford Longevity Center and MIT Age Lab, who are really looking at how people age and how people that are at a more traditional retirement age feel about working, that they may want to continue working for satisfaction reasons, and that they're able to, you know, that people are healthier and able to function longer, and, you know, they want to. Not everyone, but certainly a lot of people do.
When you kind of think about the midlife gap year, in some ways it can be kind of intimidating. If I'm running my own business or I'm a W-2 employee or whatever my role is, it's hard to just take a year off and just disconnect. It's a very hard break to make. Because if I'm midlife, let's say I'm in my, you know, I don't know what that is, 40s, 50s in there, that's a tough time. I've got probably kids, I've got mortgage, I've got expenses, and I'm just going to, and I probably have a career path or a company. So how do you make that hard disconnect for a full year and then just kind of come back like nothing's happened? So like, how do you kind of help people with that?
Honestly, some people can't. Like, some people need the lifeline, although it is better if you can, you know, if you really have a plan to disconnect. I mean, people have taken, this is again pre-COVID, but a family excursion, world tour, that kind of thing. But for the most part, for business owners, I would say it depends on the business. A lot of times there's more lead up time for business owners to prepare their business so that it can run without them. But the bonus is that for most business owners, having a business that runs without them also makes it a lot more valuable when they ultimately plan an exit strategy. So it can also be part of, you know, a test for how things would run without you. And that takes a lot of, that does take a lot of planning, and not every business can do that, but many can. That kind of planning, you know, we usually say would take like 2 years of lead time. But what is surprising in terms of career path is, you know, we try to do some worst case scenarios for people who are W-2 employees and may not be able to return to their job, but they're using this as kind of a pivot time where they want to explore something else, or part of the planning is for them to go back to school during that period. So we have to fund that. So people can be creative about it. You mentioned a mortgage. I mean, sometimes the answer is if you're going to go somewhere else with your family, because as you mentioned, people have kids then, and not every kid wants to be pulled out of school to go travel with their family. There may be solutions where you stay home, but if you do choose to travel and that's what you're family wants to do. You could also rent your house out for that time you're gone, so you get some income for that period, or do a house share. You try to be creative about it, but there's risk. And it depends on the, for some people, it's a great solution because the option is burnout. And there's so many negative parts of this, parts of burnout in terms of personal losses. So it's the better of those options. It kind of depends what your options are, because it can really rejuvenate your business. We're in wine country and we do have people that, you know, will take time off and do something related, like go to different wine areas or explore things that can kind of help rejuvenate them.
I love the idea of the rejuvenation. It's funny, a few years ago, I was feeling pretty burnt out in December and I decided to take the last 2 weeks of the year off. Of course, I hadn't taken a vacation in like 20 years. I took those 2 weeks off and it was the best 2 weeks I had. It just opened up a lot of thought and it opened up my mind to like all the other things that could be done. And I think just separating yourself, like you're saying, really expands the possibilities for your brain to come up with other ideas and to kind of disconnect for a while. And it's hard to describe, but it just provides opportunities with that.
Right. You have to kind of experience it. And midlife's a tough time. Actually, I mentioned the Stanford Longevity Center earlier, and they do something that's interesting called the New Map of Life, and basically showing how much is bunched up at midlife in terms of what you mentioned earlier, kind of, you know, you're kind of in the thick of your career, your kids are in school, there's, you know, assuming you have children, but even if you don't, like, there's a lot you want to grab in midlife, and it can be overwhelming. And I think that's where we try to untangle that a little bit and add that financial component, because sometimes people don't get to that point. They just think, I'm just stuck here and I'm going to try to get to the other side. And I think what we're saying is, you know, maybe there's something you can do while you're here, while you're going through this kind of peak busyness in your life, to, you know, not wait and to take action now and work through it and come up with, even if it's not a year break, like some kind of gap where you can regroup. And, you know, you took 2 weeks. So for most people, they might need a little longer, but it does change your perspective and can help you to see things more clearly when you return.
I mean, this year I'm taking a month. I'm taking December off.
Oh, see, so you're easing into it. Like in 10 years,
yeah,
you'll be doing a gap year.
Yeah, I'm hoping by, you know, a few years from now, my kids are old enough, maybe take like the summer off and go around Europe or something, but just something cool. Like just, you know, I kind of see it as that my kids are only young for so long and there's only so much time you can kind of spend with them before you're not cool anymore. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was mentioning earlier. I think it's a really narrow window, but it's also the window where, you know, you're afraid to take time off. But because once they start, you know, in high school and thinking about college, it's a little harder to really disconnect then too. So there's kind of a window where they're old enough that they want to still spend time with you, but you can still do it rationally without kind of derailing things.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, last year with COVID, it's funny because we're taping this around Thanksgiving. I know it's coming out in January, but, you know, last year I was very thankful for COVID, which, you know, people were kind of looking at me funny when I said that. And I said, well, what it did is it caused you to kind of break your routine. You know, we had 3 months, you know, April through June, where, you know, everyone's locked in their houses. We actually rented a house down the beach, because no one was down there. It was cheap. It was really cost effective. And we got to spend 3 months at the beach with nothing to do. We didn't have activities. We didn't have sports. We didn't have all the stuff that goes along with life. We had nothing. We will never get this opportunity again until the kids are out of the house. So it was a great opportunity just to hang around the beach for 3 months. No one around. It was like we had the whole place to ourselves and it was quiet. And I honestly wanted to live down the beach, even though it wasn't practical with normal life, but.
Yeah, but it is like a forced, you know, change of perspective. And honestly, I think people have become more open to this idea of, you know, maybe I should have some kind of formal break, or, because they've had a taste of it kind of forced on them. And it wasn't that bad. It was, you know, there were benefits to it. And I think that makes it easier to contemplate. You know, you were talking earlier about, you know, how do people even start with this, or how do people, you know, start thinking about it? This past 2 years almost has given people that opportunity to think, oh, maybe there is a different path, you know, that I could craft that includes both my family and my job, or both, you know, things I want to accomplish without derailing my career.
I think you're 100% right, because COVID did a lot to change people's perspective. I know I followed this story of this couple with their kids. They got, I think it was a Sprinter van, and they just basically, or RV for people who don't know what that is. And they traveled around the country in 2020 with their kids. And they just, if there was anything they were doing it from the road. And they just had an experience that you couldn't do any other time. It was such a unique opportunity for them. And I thought it was fantastic. I know a lot of people, you mentioned you're out on the West Coast, a lot of people from Silicon Valley are moving out to Lake Tahoe and to Montana and places that are outside of the norm because their companies are allowing them to be virtual. So if you're going to be virtual, why not live somewhere beautiful?
And actually, that idea of road schooling, which I had not heard of before we started doing this, of, you know, kind of homeschooling on the road, there's a lot of resources for that out there for parents that are thinking, I'm not a homeschooler, but I'll do my best. But like anything, that's kind of become something where there are a network of people that can help you.
What are some final thoughts you can leave our listeners with if they want to try this themselves and maybe they don't know where to start?
We do have kind of a workbook, I would say, on our website called Midlife Gap Year that does go through the steps of kind of planning and just things to think about to start that process going. Think about what your resources are, maybe a little broader, more broadly than you have in the past. That could be a good place to start asking those questions. You know, for kind of midlifers, Gen Xers, you've been planning for a baby boomer retirement, but now that whole landscape has changed and it's challenging, but it could be a really great opportunity to just think about kind of a windier road. And, you know, we can help with that.
Great. Well, Lizette, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Where can people find more about you?
Our website is Advisory Group SF, as in San Francisco. So Advisory Group SF. .com, and there's a link on there for the Midlife Gap Year.
So let's kind of get our panelists here, our cheery panelists. Everyone's kind of coming back from holiday parties. Let's start with our very own Megan Gorman. Hey, Megan.
Hi, how are you, Kirk?
Good. You ready to go yet?
Oh, I'm ready. Green juice, coffee, we're going.
Well, good. We also have our very own Barb Freeberg. Hey, Barb.
Hey, I wish I was at the party next time. Don't forget about me.
Okay, yeah, you're in. I throw parties. For all the listeners, I had my holiday party last night, which was a blast, but I'm paying for it this morning a little.
Nice. We're going to have a virtual cocktail party so our listeners can chime in sometime. And maybe that's something we can do for next year. We have a virtual cocktail party with our listeners. So let's chime right in here. So Barb, what were some of your takeaways from the interview?
Gap year. Sign me up. Who doesn't want a gap year? I mean, but really, how realistic is this? Yeah, it's a great idea, but who has a year's living expenses saved up? If you're your own boss, forget it. I went on a 2-week vacation, did not work for the first time in like 10 years, and it was awesome, but nobody ran my business during those 2 weeks. It didn't get done. So I feel a little bit like, yeah, sounds great, wonderful, if you're rich and privileged and, you know, go for it.
All right. On the positive note, Megan, what about you?
Well, it's interesting. I would love to take a gap year. I'd love to take a month off. There's 1,000 things I'd love to do. But I think Barb hits the nail on the head where, you know, for a lot of us who have their own businesses or are in client-facing businesses, it's really challenging. That said, you know, I work in the world of corporate executives, and I am seeing more and more companies take this type of policy into consideration. I actually custody at Schwab. So I have people at Schwab I work with, and they get a sabbatical every, I think, 5 or 6 years, where they can take significant time off, but they get paid. I also work with another company where they also get a sabbatical after they've worked for 5 years. They get to take, I believe, 6 weeks off. It's interesting that it's becoming a bit of a corporate benefit, but it's not something that most people could do. And I think there's also a moral aspect to it. So one of the issues I've heard about in this is that people work to get to the point where they can take the sabbatical. But then if the company doesn't require it, they often don't come back. And it's like a good point where they change jobs. So it's sort of this weird thing of, you know, I think some people feel like if you're going to get the sabbatical benefit, you should come back and work for the company after the sabbatical as well, versus just leaving after you get the benefit. So I wish I had it, but I do know people who do get it and they love it and they do a lot of different things with it.
That's a good point, Megan. I didn't even thought of that. This is typically a benefit that a lot of colleges have, especially for professors. You work there for 20 years and you get like a year off. You can go sow your oats, do research. I mean, all sorts of things. And I always thought that was a great benefit for working at a college. I think, as you said, Megan, I mean, this is, if you look at our culture, like our work culture, you look at like the 80s, 90s, and people were working hard. And we got to this point where technology was supposed to allow us to have a better quality of life. Right? We work the same hours and we have a better quality of life. We have to work less. And all technology did was cause us to work more because we're more efficient, which is not really the intention. And I think we've had this trend where it's shifting back the other way, where people are really starting to realize like, hey, I need to enjoy my life. I'm not just a workhorse. And, you know, am I working to live or living to work? And I think one of the things that I find interesting is COVID did a lot, you know, in the last 2 years, like the COVID incident. I think what it really did was accelerated trends that already existed in a lot of areas. And this is one of those trends where people are trying to find a better quality of life. I mean, we look at some of these Scandinavian countries where literally it's like, I forget which country it was, but one company I read about where the furniture literally will rise off the floor at 6 o'clock. So you cannot work anymore. They've created this environment where it's like, no, your work is over. Now it's time to go home. And I think in some ways, a lot of European countries have this baked into their culture. And I feel like, you know, in our culture, we need to have more of that. So I think a gap year is a good start. But I think, as Barb says, this is challenging. And I don't think it's necessarily just for the rich folk. It comes down to planning. I mean, so Barb, I mean, think about it. Like if you know you're going to take a gap year, you work at Schwab or these other companies, in 5 years, you're going to get a gap month or months or whatever it is. Wouldn't you work towards that and save? I mean, you don't have to be rich. You just have to be diligent, right?
If you're talking about a year without a salary, if you're married, okay, I can see how you can make that work for sure. If you're a single person, there was some conversation about you can rent your house out and that sort of thing and save a lot. But I think it's really a small, most people have trouble saving and working. So not working and saving enough in advance, I think it's a tough sell. That said, my husband is an academic. He's just finishing up a sabbatical. He had an amazing time. He delved into a new area, which he studied up on and is implementing in his work. But his university requires that he come back for a year after that sabbatical, or he loses the pay that he accrued during the sabbatical. But I want to shift this to something else, which is the values around working. I don't know if a lot of other people have this value, but when I was raised, work was a sign of your worth. If you're a hard worker and you make a lot of money, it means you're more worthy. Now, in reality, is that a fact? No, it's not. But when you get that ingrained into yourself, and I know both Kirk and Megan, you probably see this in your older clients where they stop working and they go to pieces because they have no way to value themselves. And so I wanted to shift the conversation and really get your takes, Kirk and Megan, about how do you work through that, what I would call it, a faulty belief system.
I don't know if it's a faulty belief system. I do see people retire and it's very hard for them to let go of the identity. And so they go back into consulting or do board work. And then I have others who do transition very well. What I find interesting is I find it's harder for the men to make the transition than for women. And I think it's because women wear a lot more hats during their working lives. So it's a little bit of an easier transition where a lot of men focus on the career thing. And I'm making huge sweeping generalizations. So I don't know if they've got misplaced values, because I know I'm going to struggle when I finally retire. I think it's just that's what they valued in their identity. But I think it's good to also test out being retired and what it's going to feel like. Barb, you've been given a gift with your husband's sabbaticals. You know what it's like to have, I mean, he's not retired, but you know what it's like to have a husband who doesn't have to get out of bed some days to work. And I'll tell you, you know, it is a, in my marriage, my husband's 12 years older than me. And we have this discussion quite a bit, which is I'm 45. I'm like full steam ahead. You're not stopping me. What is he going to do all day? And how's he going to define retirement when I'm still working and working like crazy? So I don't think it's misplaced values. It's just, it's what people value differently.
To your both of your points, there's a comment that was made about men. And I think men look at this, and I'll probably have to cancel myself after making this comment, but you know, men and women perceive work differently. Men derive their self-worth through working in general. Obviously, there's exceptions. But I think historically, men have always perceived themselves as being the breadwinners, even though they're not the only breadwinner, but they perceive themselves this way. And I think it's a generational thing that's maybe moving in younger generations. But that's how I was raised. Both my parents worked, but you know, my dad perceived his value as providing for the family. And I was raised that way, so I perceive it the same way. So I think when men retire, they lose that sense of self-worth. Whereas I think, as Barb alluded, like women have a more complicated version of self-worth. And it's not just exclusively work. I think men really have to be mindful of this, not because it's a bad thing, but I think they just have to understand that this is going to impact them when they retire. And I've seen a lot of clients where they retire and they're listless. Like they just don't know what to do with themselves. They're, you know, they don't have a sense of purpose. So a lot of this is, if you retire, we call it phase two, because I don't like the word retirement. I think it's pejorative. I think phase two is about an opportunity that you can use this time to do whatever you want. And so it doesn't have to be work. It could be something else. It could be a project or something that brings you value. The midlife gap year is a good idea because it's a test run. It's a test run for what retirement could be. It's more of reconfiguring your thinking around the idea that life is not just work. You know, it's kind of like these people put together bucket list. Oh, when I retire, I'm going to do all these things in my bucket list. Why wait till you're retired? Why not do the bucket list now and start checking things off for the rest of your life? Like, what if you retire and you have some health problem, you can't do any of them? Like, why wait for that? So I think the midlife gap year is a good concept to change your thinking so that you look at your life differently. And you look, it doesn't have to be a whole year. It could be a month. I know there's a lot of issues. Barb raised a bunch. There's a lot of issues around this, but I think what's important is to understand the framework around it and what this is going to do for you psychologically, for thinking about your life different. So how you can enjoy your life more. So that's how I think about it. Barb, I want to kind of get back to this because I think it's important, because I don't want people to just shrug off the idea that they can't do this because their job doesn't allow it or whatever. Let's say somebody did want to do a gap year or gap month, whatever's practical, because I know your husband just went through this. What are some ways people can plan for this and start thinking about implementing this in their life?
I think part of the plan is you save up a bucket of money. You segregate that money from your retirement, from your emergency fund. And I would advise start small. I wouldn't do a year. That would just be my personal suggestion. I would say do a month or 2 months, and then it's manageable. And then allow yourself some flexibility there. If you're self-employed, because if you're an employee and your employer allows that, the main thing you have to do is save up some money, and then you have to figure out what you're going to do. So I think that's a lot easier than if you're self-employed, in which you have to maybe pre-plan your work and also set up a bucket of money that you can use. And we can all live more economically than we do. If you want to do this, you determine what it will take. And like any other goal, you create a checklist of this is what I have to do. I have to save up whatever it is. If it's, you know, X amount of dollars for this amount of time, these are the things I want to do. This is how much they're going to cost. And actually, I have to say, I am somewhat of an expert on robo-advisors who help with digital money management, and Wealthfront in particular has a section on their platform for goals. And one of the goals is take a year off. So they help you do the financial planning for taking a year off and let you know if you can do it and what it will cost.
Yeah. And just for reference, you are the expert, Barb, not an expert in robo-advisors, just for the audience's reference.
Thank you. I always like praise.
So Megan, you know, from your perspective, I mean, I'm sure, I know I have a handful of clients who've done something like this. I'm sure you do too, but there's a lot to it. I mean, the saving is part of it, like what Barb said, but there's also the part of negotiating with your employer and trying to figure out, you know, how to do this, because some employers do it and some may not. So what have you seen, or what would you advise people to think about as they're trying to implement those?
I mean, like taking time off?
Yeah.
Some people negotiate with their employer on it. That's just not how it works, right? I think some people are lucky to get into firms that have these types of benefits. I guess it depends on the level of job you have, but most people couldn't go to their boss and say, I want to take a sabbatical. It just, I mean, they look at you like you were nuts. It's just not done. I think if you want to take time off, you might have to leave your job to do it. I don't think you can go to your boss. That's my take on it. And if someone came to me and said they want to take a sabbatical, I'd be like, well, that means you're leaving. Like, I'm not trying to be very practical. I'm not going to pay someone to be on sabbatical, and I'm not going to institute a policy of it.
Well, the other thing is that we haven't mentioned is save up vacation time. You know, if your boss lets you roll over vacation, say, okay, I'm going to save up for 2 or 3 years. So I have, you know, 6 weeks vacation and I'm going to request 2 weeks without pay. And there you go. You've got then 2 months off.
One thing I'll say is I think a lot of people probably feel like they couldn't. I see this a lot from people. They take a week off and then they feel like, oh, I wish I didn't take that week off because now my life is harder. I got to backfill all this. Tim Ferriss talked about this in his book, 4-Hour Workweek, where he talked about the concept of taking time off and like slowly dripping on your boss as a way to get extended time off. And I think conceptually it's good. He talked about, well, start working from home one day a week and then say, and then be more productive and then get another day. And then just like slowly work towards the idea of time off. You know, I think if you show that you're able to do it in a responsible way, I mean, look, women take maternity leave. They're taking how many months off and they come back. Conceptually, I think it's possible. I think we can all argue that your boss is going to like Barb's looking like you're nuts, but the concept's there. Not many companies, but some give paid paternity leave too. Or even if it's unpaid, I think it's less the idea of the pay, because I think for a lot of people, that's important, obviously. But if you save up, you can do it. I think it's just thinking outside the box, is that we should all think about this differently so that we're not just saying, oh, this can't be done because no one's done it before, or this isn't possible because of this is going to happen. I think if you look at it in small baby steps, it's probably more possible than you realize. And frankly, I'd love to see this implemented across the board with a lot of companies, just as right now the trend is having a more quality of life type environment for employees. And I know a lot of them are keeping people home because of COVID, but it keeps the similar mentality of it can be a better quality of life. You can find ways to improve your work-life balance. Let's kind of wrap it up here. So Megan, what are some final thoughts from you about this, and where can people find more about you?
Look, I mean, I think if you're lucky enough to work in an employer that offers sabbaticals, that's great. I don't know how practical this is. Depends on the type of business you have and where you work. You know, I think there's a lot of people who have their own businesses and it's just not possible to do this. So you can find me at Forbes.com/Megan Gorman. Thanks for having me on, Kirk.
Thanks for coming on, Megan. And Barb, final thoughts from you.
I think this concept raises the idea of examining your values, figuring out what's important to you, and living your life in accord with those values. It's easier said than done. I'm Barbara Friedberg. You can find me at Barbara Friedberg Personal Finance, Robo Advisor Pros, and on my YouTube channel. Thanks for having me on, Kirk. See you next time. Bye.
Thanks for coming on, Barb. That's the show for this week. So thanks again for joining us in Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, wealth manager of Innovative Advisor Group. We don't just manage your wealth, we make your life better. You can find more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me every week here on the show. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast and the podcast app of your choosing. You can also check out the show at moneytreepodcast.com. On our website, you'll have access to all our show notes, resources, and the archive shows. Also, we're on YouTube now, so please check out our YouTube channel. When you're there, please subscribe and leave a comment. Lastly, please leave a show rating and comment on the podcast app of your choice. Have a great week ahead. And remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.